You're listening to the Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal, supported by Bayer Crop Science.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this week's Tillage Podcast, recording on Wednesday night, the 24th of April, for your records later on. Coming up, we hear from a farmer telling his story on YouTube, Andrew Ward in the UK. We look at broadleaf weeds on the tillage pages, forage contracts, slurry from the tram lines, grain markets and weather reports, of course. First up, though, fieldwork. And what a wonderful week it has been. Cork and Tipperary kind of got started earlier and parts of Waterford got started earlier last week. There was rain in the Midlands and torrential rain down in Wexford on Wednesday, which slowed things down. But some people in those counties got out Friday and certainly got out Saturday and Sunday at the weekend. And all systems were go, I'd say, in many places by Saturday afternoon and Sunday. Whether that be people maybe in the northeast catching up, you know, where there's still herbicide to go out on winter cereals and then getting into cultivations and sowing. And there's just been such a power of work done over the past week. It's phenomenal, really, the work that has been done. The amount that had to be caught up in, and I suppose it shows the capacity that is there machinery-wise on tillage farms and how we're kitted out for the weather on these farms. There is still a lot to do. So, you know, while some farmers are now finishing up sowing and a lot of areas of the country are kind of at 70% complete, there's a huge amount of work to be done. There's a lot of farmers who are only starting to sow. You know, land has been slow to dry out in a lot of places. So there's still a huge amount of work to be done for cereals, that is, and beans. And then, of course, there's the whole other thing that starts. So there is patches of beet and maize going in and potatoes, of course. But the, you know, those crops are really only getting into the bulk of work now, or will be, you know, after the cereals have been sown. But there's a lot of people with work to do. So I suppose if you have your work done, it's great. But just a reminder that there's still people out there with plenty to do. That's something that we need to take account of and think about, you know. So hopefully you're listening from the tractor, or maybe you're an agronomist listening from your car going from field to field. And, you know, all of you out there have a lot of work to do. But just remember to talk to each other. Ask if you need help. Reach out to people. You know, maybe your neighbour has finished up and there is able to give you a handout. You know, ring a contractor if needs be, if you feel like you're under pressure. But please don't be under pressure alone. Make sure that you talk to people. I got a message from a farmer this week, and he was telling me how he was getting on at his sowing. And, you know, he asked me to remind people to look out for each other, because he was concerned. He had talked to his neighbour earlier on in the day, and that neighbour had a lot of work to do. And, you know, he just said, make sure you remind people to talk to each other. So keep in touch, keep safe, take your time, eat well and get sleep. Okay, in the paper this week, so we have on the news pages a bit of an update on field work and on those pages as well, potato prices and some farmer views on the 100 euro per hectare tillage payment as well. But of course, we have our update on field work, our weekly update on the From the Tramlines page. So we have Alistair Cragg from Derry, Ray Fitzgerald from Cork and Conal Moore from Galway are on the page this week. So Conor Keogh was talking to them all. So that's that'll be a good one to hear.
Irish growers and agronomists know Askra to be the trusted and reliable choice for wheat crops. Askra delivers the broadest spectrum of disease control on all the key wheat diseases, alongside proven plant health benefits, in a simple one-can solution at T1. With a flexible dose rate to suit your crop, you can be sure that whatever the disease, drilling date, variety or weather, you only have to use Askra. Askra X-Pro was formulated using Bayer's unique leaf shield technology, ensuring growers get the maximum benefit for their cash. For more information, please contact your local agrochemical supplier or visit the Bayer Crop Science website at www.bayercropscience.ie.
Now, next up, I've been saving this one for a while. I said I might wait till people are in tractors and can take their time to listen to this one. So Andrew Ward, he's a farmer from Lincolnshire in the UK. He spoke at the BSF Technical Conference back in February. And Andrew, some of you will know from YouTube, he puts up a video on YouTube every Wednesday and every Sunday as well. Generally Sunday morning around 8 o'clock, his video goes up. And just a really interesting listen back at that BSF conference in February. The room were enthralled. And I recorded, BSF kindly and Andrew kindly allowed me to record that talk. So I've kept some of it for you now. So Andrew started off by introducing us to his farm, the area and the crops.
So we're farming 660 hectares or 1,600 acres. Total farmed, you can see there, we own 500, I'll keep to acres at the minute, we own 590 acres, AHA tenancy, that's an Agricultural Holdings Act tenancy that I've got, I inherited that from my father, I've got my daughter, we're just getting her on the tenancy, so it's a three-generation tenancy. You can't get these tenancies anymore, they're all the tenancies now are the ones where they're short term and they are a lot more money. So that's the tenancy, and then we contract farm two local farms that's right on our boundary. So I'll move about. Let's just go back onto labour. So looking here at labour, we've got two full time guys, one part time who just helps us in the workshop a couple of days a week. He is an ex-Simba machinery designer. He's involved in a lot of the design of the Simba kit, which you'll see we use a lot of. And we've got two guys help us out just part-time at harvest.
Now, Andrew has soil maps for his whole farm, so the sand, silt and clay content. And this is going to be very relevant to what he talks about a bit later on as well.
This is a soil map of our Heavyland farm. And if you haven't had this done, I would really, really recommend it. So I've got the whole farm is scanned for sand, silt and clay content. This is our Heavyland farm. And I just want to highlight this field at the top here. You can see now I'm using my pointer, that one. So that field there, if you look at the colours and the scale here, the dark red is where we're looking at. So it's right down here. So sand, we've only 5 to 10% sand in that field. Now, if we go... some of these other ones you can see, they're more sand in the middle. And the ones in the middle of the farm here are in our sugar beet rotation. Going on to silt, if you look at the top field again, the yellow here, we're right down here now. We're 45% silt in this field and only 10% sand. Then coming here, you can see these fields in the middle in the sugar beet rotation down to sort of 20% silt. Moving along now to clay, this is really interesting when you look at this. Again, highlight this field at the top of the screen here. Go down the middle. You can see we're in the middle of the scale here. We're 40 to 50% clay. So straight away, you can see this field. We have got 80% of the soil type in this field is silt and clay. And that is the most difficult combination. If you have 80% silt, it's difficult. 80% clay, which is nearly non-existent, that's difficult. And it's because the clay particles wash down into the silt and block up the drainage channels. And that is why silt and clay is really, really difficult. And you can see here again, these sugar beet fields in the middle here, we've sort of here in this region 35% clay. So there is some clay, we have to manage it, we get some good yields of sugar beet. So that's the Heavyland farm. I now just want to show you the Lightland farm, and this is what we have on Lincolnshire Heath. There's no dikes, there's no drains, it's free draining, we only have 8 inches of soil, and then we've got into pure limestone. And we've got sugar beet on that farm at the moment, and we'll lift that probably next week, the last of the sugar beet, we'll get out the ground. So going on the same process, the same thing, you can see the sand content here. So looking at these fields, straight away, we're right down to 50, 55% sand and even more in this field. So you can see here a lot different soil straight away. Then moving into silt, we've less silt. Straight away, we're sort of 25, 15% silt somewhere there. And then when you go into clay, you can see how this has changed as well. Red, a lot of these fields down to 20%. So you can see that far one is the sand. So this is why it's so important when you start looking at your soil and your texture of this soil and knowing what your fields are. Because, and again, I get a lot of people saying to me on social media, some of you have seen the arguments I have. They say, oh, my field's heavier than yours, our soil's heavier than yours when I talk about direct drilling. And if they can't back it up with one of these, I stop the discussion because it's absolutely pointless.
So he's right there about having the maps. We always hear people saying they have heavy land, but he has the proof for it there. Andrew also has the proof on his rainfall data. So he's 27 years records of rainfall.
Now looking at rainfall. So when we start to look at rainfall, we have had a very wet year. But I've been keeping rainfall records for 27 years. This is our average, 610 millimetres in a year. And you can see July is a wet month. October is a wet month. That's on average over 27 years. Then we had our driest year on record in the last 27 years was 2011. You can see April, we only had 4 millimetres in April. And this whole year, we had 430 millimetres in 2011. And you wouldn't believe it, 1 year later, 2012, was our wettest year. And we had 1,030 millimetres. You can see here, we had 190-odd millimetres in April. June was wet, August was wet, November, December wet. Very, very bad year. But 2023, is it our wettest? No, it's not. Because 2023, we had 740 millimetres. But again, you can see July, very, very wet. March, very wet here. And this was because that was the reason we didn't get a lot of our spring crops in while April, and we didn't get the sugar beet planted on the heavy land until the beginning of May. And we still had to get it out of the ground in September so we could get wheat in.
Okay, so they really struggled last year with the rain as well. And back in February when he was talking, they only had 30% of their winter wheat in, I think. But look, on to the next thing, and I suppose what many of us will associate with that part of the UK over in Lincolnshire is blackgrass. And, you know, blackgrass is normal now over in the UK. And look, really, it's probably normal here too, only, you know, blackgrass is now common in Ireland, but needs to be made more normal. So here's how Andrew has been dealing with blackgrass on his farm.
First started to look at blackgrass in 2013 and dealing with it. And what I did, I divided the farm up into a traffic light cropping system. So all the fields that were really bad for blackgrass, I put into a red category and put them into continuous spring barley. And if you think, remember, this is our heavy soils as well, that field with 80% silt and clay, continuous spring barley. Solo it very early in August, September, straight after the combine, leave it till the following spring. So that's all the fields that are very, very bad for blackgrass. Do not grow winter wheat if you have got bad blackgrass, because you're absolutely wasting your time, because it will just encourage it and make it worse. Then the fields that are manageable, we're into an amber category. And here we've got four-year rotation. And these fields, we've got sugar beet. So these is the lighter of our heavy land fields, and they're very light lands as well. So if we've got blackgrass in the sugar beet, and we haven't done a very good job of controlling it, it goes into spring barley. If it's controlled, it goes into wheat. And then here, we can't grow beans. If we use neonic seed treatment, which we can on sugar beet if DEFRA allow it, we always use it on sugar beet. We can't grow beans for 32 months after sugar beet, which takes out that year as well. So we put it in with oats. And then depending on whether we've got the blackgrass controlled, it's wheat or barley there. Then switching to our very light land, this is where up on the heath, on the very sandy land, really easy working soil, very, very little, if any, blackgrass at all. And it's a four-year rotation, sugar beet, spring barley, oats and wheat. Really, really simple rotation. And we get very good spring barley up there. Very good spring barley. It's the yield of it is probably, and you can get anywhere up to 8 tonnes a hectare. And we get really good quality spring barley as well, so it's good. So there's the three different soil types and the different rotations, I mean. So when we start to look now, when we started this in 2012-13, these are the crops. So looking here, we had half the farm in winter wheat there. We had 35% nearly in oilseed rape. Those two were the main reasons why we had blackgrass. We were on a wheat rape rotation year on year on year. That all that did was encourage blackgrass. We had very little spring crops. Right in the middle of our really heavily looking at the blackgrass situation, you can see we dropped the winter wheat right down to 21%. That was mainly on the land where there wasn't any blackgrass, and on the light land. Oilseed rape was dropping here anyway because of flea beetle, so it's naturally dropping. You can see here, so that just highlights that. You can see the difference there, half what it was in 2013. here, very interested in the cropping. We've come in nearly with half the farm into spring cropping. I don't worry about it because in my view, and I know from our figures, you can make better returns on a blackgrass-free spring crop than you can a blackgrass-full winter crop. Just remember that, because blackgrass will absolutely take no prisoners. With yields of 100 ears per square metre of blackgrass will give you a yield reduction of 1 ton per hectare. So big reductions. So spring crops there, big lot of spring crops. Then now the last harvest, 2023, we're well on top of blackgrass. We've beaten it in most fields. Winter wheat back up to 50%, you can see there. Spring crops, we've actually dropped down, back down again. We've stopped growing spring wheat. And be careful with spring wheat in a blackgrass situation, because it's not very competitive. Spring barley is the best spring crop in a blackgrass situation, bar none, because it smothers the light out. I'll show you a photo in a minute. Then here, we've introduced spring oats and spring beans and brought those in, and we've increased this because we've gone into mid-tier, and we've got some winter bird food plots as well. So our flower margins and countryside stewardship has increased. So that just shows our story of where we were, where we were in the middle in 2017, and then where we are this last harvest, how we've changed and then gone back again. So looking here at blackgrass, what is it? So some of you have seen that. That's a big biro. In that ear will be anywhere up to 1,000 seeds. 1,000 seeds in that one ear. Then next year, those 1,000 seeds will produce 1,000 plants that will give you another 1,000 seeds per ear. It is so, so vigorous. Do not, if you see any blackgrass, one blackgrass plant in your field, you get out your tractor and pull it. Get out your sprayer. Don't leave it, because you'll just end up with an infestation. So that's how much it can produce. So when you start to look, wheat like this is not viable. So a nice crop of wheat on light land, and I hasten to add this isn't mine, we've got blackgrass dotted around all around this crop. What chemical would you put on that to try and control that blackgrass? There's only one chemical I put on that, and that's Roundup. You cannot control blackgrass in that situation with a can. If you do, you'll break the product, which I'll show you in a minute. Roundup is the only thing in a situation like that. Here is one of our fields that was really, really bad. So we've had as bad a blackgrass as anything. All that is blackgrass. All that is blackgrass. So you can't, and that field now is clean. Through nine years, this has had 9 years continuous spring barley. So looking here, that's what it turns out like. This is obviously, this blackgrass now is beyond roundupping because it started to shed the seed, but that wanted roundupping at the end of May, that field did. And that was one of our fields. That was one of our fields in about 2011, 2012. This is an old photo, but really, really good photo. It just highlights some, and some farmers will allow that and they'll combine that and then just spread the blackgrass around the farm. And that's how bad it can get if you don't do anything to it. So here, one of our control measures is hand roguing. You can see we have a team in here from Lithuania, and we pull every field every year, regardless of whether there's any blackgrass there or not. And this is the type of heat we pull. This is my shepherd, German shepherd, not now, but you can see, obviously, a big dog, high to the heap, massive heap of blackgrass. That's all being pulled by hand by these people there. And so we take every plant off the farm. This is a massive, massive thing for controlling blackgrass. Do not underestimate how important this is, spraying patches out. Now, these patches, again, I know from experience what is pullable and what isn't. This is not pullable. That's why I sprayed it. But so in this field, it's a 45-acre field. There's only 1.7 acres roundupped off. Yes, it had fertiliser and everything else. That seems significant to me. This picture here, what that is, it's not a herbicide in the rape. This is Roundup from the previous year. So the very first year I started to do this job of roundupping crops off, this here, I thought there was virtually no blackgrass in this bottom area, just a few plants spotted, dotted about. We weren't hand roguing. I just sprayed it off. So I switched the sprayer off across there, and I thought, right, see what that's like. This is the seed return from one or two from a very, very low number of plants. That is what a good job it does, spraying off the crop and stopping it from seeding. This is a year after I sprayed it off, and that's had no herbicides. That crop hasn't. That just shows the value of doing that. So, so important. Then here, this is what I say about odd plants. Up there is two ears of blackgrass. Down here, there's four ears of blackgrass there. Do not leave them. Pull them. If you're going through with the sprayer, jump out the sprayer and pull them. So, so important to take out a very low number. Spring barley. This shows you how competitive spring barley is. Very, very good cover. It doesn't let the light come through. And this is why the black grass does not like spring barley and why it's the best crop bar none to control it. And that can be achieved. You can get that. And every one of our fields is like that going into harvest because we make sure we have none seeding. And it can be done, but it's taken us 10 years to get to it and a lot of cost. But it can be done. So please, if you've got black grass plants dotted about, do not let them seed because you'll end up in a mess like some of these photos. So then looking at control costs, this just highlights again how good spring barley is. Herbicides, all we do here is a pre-emergence, low-cost pre-emergence of DFF and Crystal, and then Hand Rogue, £28 a hectare on average, and then our total grass weed control on a black grass-free crop is £86 a hectare on winter wheat. This is Harvest 21, you'll see on the left, and I've put Harvest 21 because that was the last year we grew spring wheat. So just to show you here, spring wheat is £77 a hectare total to get a black grass-free crop. Spring barley here is 68, and I'm highlighting this here because this shows you how spring barley is better than spring wheat at controlling black grass. So, Atlantis. We've all used it, and this just shows the product I'm trying to highlight here. If you rely on a can to control black grass, you will break that product. We've had Luxamo at home 2 years now. It's coming here. Do not rely on a can to get you out of a problem. The can should be your last product you use, not your first. It should be part of the IPM, and you do lots of things with spraying. If you rely on a can, if you rely on Luxamo to get you out of a problem, this is Atlantis. Within 3 years, the level had dropped off hugely. And within 5 years, the product was gone. It had it. And this is what happens to products if you overuse them and use them in the wrong situation and don't use other systems with it as well.
Okay, light at the end of the tunnel there on black grass, but as you can see, huge costs involved in that. I mean, the amount of people he has roguing the crop, it just shows you the effort that goes into keeping black grass under control and shows you the importance of identifying the weed earlier on your own farm so that you don't get to this stage as well. So really a stark reality of what black grass can do to a farm in that piece. Now, next up, not everyone will agree with this next bit that Andrew has to say, but he has trials carried out on his farm. So he's talking about the heavy land on his farm and how he's working out on that land with cover crops and direct drilling.
We can grow cover crops on light land. This is our heathland. We can grow cover crops on there without getting out of bed. It's so easy to do it. However, on heavy land, it is very, very, very difficult. And we've proved after 8 years of a trial, it's virtually impossible to make it work. So this is our seven-year trial. We've had seven-year trial into cover crops and direct drilling. One field, 22-acre field, I decided 7 years ago just to put it in cover crops and direct drilling. So we haven't got a direct drill, so I've borrowed ones from neighbours. I've got dealers to come with them. So we've got Sky Easy Drill here, got Horsch Avatar just showing two different drills we used. So here, this picture on the left, that is when direct drilling is going well on heavy land. And I thought, this was about year three. And I thought, great, we've cracked this really, really well. On the right is when it doesn't go so well. And that is the same field as that the following year. This was drilled April the 6th. And a lot of people who I've had fairly heated discussions with said it was too wet when it was drilled. I should have left it. April the 6th, by the time we'd left that to dry, because it wasn't being moved, we might as well not got a crop in. So this is the problem we have on ours, and we've had 7 years of doing this, trying to make it work. So to compare, we always compare things so you know what you're dealing with. On the left is the 70-year field. On the right, this picture on the right, is the field next door. And next door to that, we've had in our standard system, Simba Solo, followed by Simba Free Flow. So we'll solo it early, solo it very early in the autumn, as soon as we can after the field's harvested. Leave it, and that's how we can get really good crops on heavy land because we work it when it's dry before the winter sets in. So cover crop direct drill, and this was Laureate, drilled the same day. Both these pictures are drilled the same day, which is March the 28th. That with the free flow, that direct drilled after a sprayed off cover crop. Then going forward, later in the season, you can see same field, Same area, black grass coming through here because it's an open canopy, because we haven't got very good emergence. Here you can see it's a lot better. It's a lot more even. And that is solo with a free flow. Straight away you can see which is going to yield better, can't you, when you look at that? So looking now into the actual results. So 2016, the first year, we had a crop failure because it was like that far pitch on the right. The crop didn't establish. We'd already spent cover crop seed and we'd spent slug pellets protecting the cover crop. So we had a cost, which we'll see in a minute. Here are the yields. I won't go through them all. We're short of time. But so nothing there. And this is the farm standard. So this is the solo followed by the free flow in the next door field. You can see going down where the yields are. We've had odd years where this one, 2019, let's see if it's highlighted. No, I'll bring this one in. So here you can see the cost, -£43 a hectare. 2019 was the year when it did better, 642 return, or income rather, when you take your costs off, against 524. However, I wanted to highlight the bottom of the screen, if you can see it at the back. 2022 was the year we had the biggest difference. We had spring cover crops and direct drilling 6.38 tonnes per hectare, our solo and Simba free flow 8.2. Now, when you transfer that into costs, the cover crop direct drilling field returned us £1,164, the conventional cultivated £1,700 a hectare return. It's just unbelievable. And I know a lot of people, I've got two neighbours near me who have bought direct drills and have switched the whole farm into direct drilling and have got soil like we've got without having comparisons and without trying it. So here we go. When you look at the figures there, and you can see the differences, and then the bottom one as well. So massive differences. And on average, the next slide, if I can remember it right, 7 years of data, here we go. So average, the average yield over those 7 years is 6.08 tonnes per hectare. The average yield of our cultivated system was 7.79. I took out the oilseed rape crop in this calculation. Net return per hectare, 547 per hectare on the cover crop direct drilled, against 728. That is an average over the 7 years, which that makes a 7 year difference £181 a hectare. So if we swap the whole farm into cover crops and direct drilling, we are losing £181 per hectare. 2022 was the biggest difference we've seen in this 7 year experiment, £550 a hectare loss for cover crops and direct drilling. Absolutely staggering. And this is, it really frustrates me. We've got DEFRA at home pushing farmers to cover crop and direct drill to save carbon, which I'll talk about in a minute. Be very, very careful thinking you're going to save money. You're going to help the carbon by direct drilling. Because if you're going to do this and lose £555, £500 a hectare, I think you need to question it whether it's right or not. Because you need to do lots of experiments and trials to see whether it works in your system. So that is one story. Now, some of you remember, you might have seen on social media, I had a direct drilling open day. We had 10 drills came in, and all on the same day, April the 6th, we had them come and we drilled spring barley. Undisturbed ground, heavy land field, undisturbed ground, no cover crop. We used our Simba free flow as one of the drills. We needed to see where it stood. This is the yield from those drills. 6.8 ton was our Simba free flow. Weaving saber tine, you can see here all the different ones, clade, now just in case you can't see at the back. So free flow, weaving saber tine, Amazon Cayenne, Dale Eco, Claydon, Sumo DTS, Horsch Avatar, Horizon DSX, SX, Sky Easy Drill, and the Simtek TSEM. So the two drills that gave the best percentage emergence are those that I've just circled. So the weaving saber tine and the Horizon gave the best percentage establishment, but they did not give the best yield. Now, the reason I think why this is, because whenever we put spring crops in, whenever we spray with glyphosate, we mix 50 kilograms a hectare of liquid nitrogen with the glyphosate, spray it on the soil surface, and obviously our free flow drill's fairly aggressive, it mixes the soil up well. It was a very, very dry year after this was drilled, so the crop was picking up the nitrogen instantly. Some of these drills hardly disturbed the ground, you couldn't see where they'd been, so they didn't get the nitrogen until it rained. I think that was the reason why some of these were so low. But it just shows that percentage establishment is not everything. Then looking, this just shows the margins. I've just put up the margin. You see the previous slide, a couple of slides ago. I've just added these in for comparisons. 1714, that's from the other trial we were doing. That's why I've got no plant counts here. This is the establishment percentages, very low because it was a wet year. And that's given the best return in the direct drill in this one field with the free flow. And then, but it was fifth for emergence. The one that gave us the best emergence was down the Horizon DSX, and its return there was £300 a hectare, less than our free flow. And we were looking at 65% emergence against 59, so 6% difference in plant numbers. Consequently, as a result of that, and as a result of the 7 years of trial, these are the machines that we have been using. I was considering going to buy a direct drill or anything. We're not. So these are the machines we're using, and these are the machines we're going to continue to use, because I know from the trials we've done and the data we've done, we are getting better returns from here than going to cover crops and direct drilling. So, carbon. Wanted to just touch on this quick. Yield drives rooting. Remember that. That's one thing to remember. Next thing. Good rooting helps soil structure. Of course it does, because obviously it's natural. Good soil structure improves yield. Agree with that? High yields pour more CO2 from the atmosphere. Every tonne of grain you produce pulls 800 kilograms of CO2 from the atmosphere. If you have a lower yield at harvest, you're actually pulling less CO2 from the atmosphere. So going direct drilling, going cover cropping, thinking you're saving money, you're actually causing yourself a double loss. So be very careful. It's a closed circle because they all drive each other. Just be very careful and think about that. That is a really, really good way of looking at the whole cycle of cultivations, yield, root and carbon.
Okay, so that's Andrew's experience of cover crops and direct drilling on his farm. And I think we'll have more from Andrew in another podcast because there's a lot going on. He talked a lot about some of the schemes and the stewardship in the UK. You know, they're getting paid for arable margins and leaving land fallow and that kind of thing. And he's also growing beans for human consumption as well. So just loads more to hear from Andrew, but we'll bring that to you in another podcast. Great to hear from the UK and from Andrew there and to hear what's going on. Now, on the tillage pages this week, Vijay Vaskar from Chagas, he's a grass weed researcher or a weed researcher, and we're used to hearing Vijay talk about grass weeds, but this week he's talking about broadleaved weeds and resistance to herbicides within those weeds. And many of you listening will be very familiar with these. You know, we've all seen the resistant chickweed, poppies, corn marigold in our crops. So Vijay has some great pictures and an update on where we're at with resistance in these weeds. And a picture paints a thousand words. So you'll see the effect that these products have had on the weeds. And to be honest, you know, most of these, you're used to seeing the pictures by now, the little squares that are tested in the greenhouse. And most of the grass or most of the broadleaved weeds have managed to grow as some were controlled, but the picture is kind of bleak there on some of the products, but certainly still products there to control these weeds. And we just have to be a bit more careful about what we use on these products and put a bit more thought into it. Also on the tillage pages, we're looking at forage contracts. So some of you may be thinking of growing fodder this year for yourselves or for another farmer. If it is for another farmer, make sure you have an agreement in place and that there's money on the table and money being handed over before that crop is sown. There's more details on the tillage pages there. While we're on that, kind of related to that, we did get, it's online, we got an update from the European Commission on that 70% slurry grant aid for slurry storage. So if you're importing slurry, you'd be able to get a 70% grant to build that storage. So this was announced in the budget. So the Department of Agriculture have told us now that the EU Commission have approved that grant, and the Department of Agriculture are basically working now on that scheme to decide what needs to be done on it. Okay, to grain trends next, and certainly a bit of a rally going on in grain markets. Lots of things at play, weather, you know, condition of wheat in the US, the EU, condition of corn in South America. There was an attack on a port in Odessa in Ukraine. So there's a lot of different things at play. The euro and the dollar and everything is in there too. But look, the basics are Matif wheat on Friday was at 223, was at 229.75 on Tuesday evening, and now on Wednesday night it's at 234.50. And then if I go, that was the December price for Matif wheat. And if I go to oilseed rape, then oilseed rape has also improved. So oilseed rape for November on Friday was at 455.50, on Tuesday 465.75, and stayed similar today at 465.50. I also have some tier lawn prices today. So green wheat for harvest 24 is €196, barley 186, beans 250, and oilseed rape 425. So things are looking up on the grain markets. Whether it's a short-term rally or a long-term rally, we don't know, but look, it's positive. So keep an eye on that. Now I have the weather report in from Met Éireann, and it's looking a little better. So it's hopefully going to stay relatively dry. So there was rain in the forecast, and I'm sure you were all looking at that rain. But it seems to kind of have disappeared a little bit. So I'll just go through. Friday, cold and frosty night on Thursday night will give way for a largely dry start to Friday. And there will be isolated showers through the day. And these showers will be in Cork and Kerry earlier on in the day, and then through the afternoon and early evening, those showers will become less frequent. There will be maybe frost on Friday night. So anyone going with road regulator or anything like that, just think about that. Saturday early will be still be some sunshine. Sunny spells will last through the morning, and mainly dry, with some showers in coastal areas, temperatures of 9 to 12 degrees. Sunday will start off with some sunshine, best in the east of the country, and will be dry mainly throughout the day. Some isolated showers, temperatures of 9 to 12 degrees. And then the outlook for Monday is the early days of next week suggest continued unsettled conditions with rain or showers at times. And on Monday, a weather front is expected to lie along the west coast, bringing rain. And then if I just look at the rainfall chart, look, the rainfall chart is really positive. Little bit of rain Saturday, 4 mil in the northwest, 3 mil in the northeast, 0 in the east, southeast. And then as I look, it's look Monday then, 10 mil in the northwest, 8 in the northeast, 5 mil in the east, southeast, 4 mil, 13 mil in the southwest, 5 mil in the west, and 9 mil in the Midlands, and then a little bit more on Tuesday, 5 and 6 mil in the southwest and west, and then back to dry on Wednesday. That's where Met Éireann are today anyway. But look, you'll all be keeping an eye on the forecast anyway. You don't need me to tell you what's coming. You'll be on numerous apps, I'm sure. That's it for this week. Thanks to Andrew for sharing his talk, to Claire for editing back at base. Stay safe, keep sewing, keep in touch, and keep the tillage flag flying.
We hope you enjoyed the Irish Farmers Journal Tillage Podcast, supported by Bayer Crop Science. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.